Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Roll Productions.
It's a Roll Productions.
This show is brought to you by the Unknown Radio Network, consisting of the very best selection of paranormal internet radio shows anywhere on the web. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Unknown Radio Network.
Welcome to Unknown Paranormal Radio. I'm your host, Kevin, with Unknown Paranormal.
I'm your favorite brown guy, Martin Bravo, with Bravo Paranormal.
And I'm the paranormal vacation guy, Jeff. Because
hey,
I'm officially on vacation.
Nice. So yesterday, guys, I got this thing. It's called EMF ITC. It's made by Digital Dowsing, the guys of Ovilus. And basically, it's like if you took an Ovilus and put a K2 meter in it. I mean, it's pretty basic. It has an Ovilus embedded in it, but it doesn't speak, you know? It just displays
right.
The word. So I have it going for tonight's show. And if it says any words, then I'll just let y'all know.
Cool.
But so far, it's set cancer and Rhonda. So wherever Rhonda's at, we need to tell her she has cancer.
Oh, no. What the hell kind of message is that?
I don't know.
If it says Mars, we know who it's talking about. Well, let's see what we got going on. I can actually announce this now. Our headliner for East Texas Ghost Con is Brian Kano of Haunted Collector. He will be.
Apparently, Molly doesn't like that.
My dog doesn't like it.
I assumed it was Molly.
No, my dog's asleep.
Oh, okay. It's just Martin's dog. Yeah. No, it's not mine.
Yes, my dog sounds like the demon baby in the background.
Yeah, Martin's dog apparently does not like Mr. What's his name?
Brian Kano of Sci-Fi's Haunted Collector.
I guess Martin's dog doesn't watch that show.
Seriously, though, I think my dog is allergic to RF frequency, you know, the waves that our phones work off of.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time I'm on the phone, this dog loses his crap.
Nice.
Anyway, back to our headliner. Brian Kano will be coming to Texas. This will be his first trip to the state of Texas, all the way from Long Island, New York. And he will be at our conference. He'll be there Friday for the paranormal karaoke / gathering of all the paranormal teams and speakers. And so we got that going on. I can announce that now. I've updated the information on Eventbrite. We have three new locations to investigate this year. We do have Hotel Marshall, which we had last year, and Unknown Paranormal investigated it a couple months ago. It's very active. There's lots of spirit activity there. We have that place. And then we have the Wiseman Hirsch Beal Home. It's a three-story house. It's 6,000 square feet. It was built in 1901. It's got a slave quarters in the back.
Whoa.
And
can I spend
so
the
we're
going to
be,
Can I spend the night there?
What?
Can I spend the night there?
No, but unknowns are going to probably investigate when you're probably going back to school. We're going to investigate that building, that house in August.
You jerks. I just want to sleep in the slave quarters just to say, yeah, here I am, I'm working for the man. But what am I getting in return? Get whipped.
Also, we have the old First National Bank building. It's a two-story building with a basement that has an old vault in it, a very old building. There's activity there as well. And we're also going to investigate the old Chamber of Commerce building. It's a two-story building that had a lot of crazy activity to the point that the Chamber of Commerce actually moved out of that building. So those are the locations for East Texas Ghost Con. Get your tickets online because they're cheaper than buying them and waiting until the last minute and buying them in person. You're going to have to spend more, so get your tickets online at www.easttexasghostcon2013.eventbrite.com. Hopefully we'll have a commercial soon where I don't have to keep saying it. We can just say it. What else do we have?
There is a service charge when you buy your tickets there is a service charge when you buy your tickets online, but Eventbrite is very cheap in that department. Let me just put this to this way. I just ordered a ticket to go see Black Sabbath in Austin next month. With the service charge and everything, my ticket was a little over $100. The face value of the ticket is about $88. So you're looking at about $12 or $13 service charge. With Eventbrite, I think the most expensive service charge on there, at least for our event, is like maybe $3.
Right. Right. And all like I said, it'll be more expensive. General admission online is $25. General admission at the door is $30. So get your tickets online. And we have VIPs available. I'll be there. Mr. Brown Man Martin will be there with his camera. And it'll be a good time. Also, let's see what we got coming up. If you're in the Shreveport, Louisiana area, there's a big it's called Downtown Paranormal Fest. It is the 21st through the 23rd or 24th. It starts on Thursday and ends on Sunday. Not this weekend, but next. Tickets are on sale for that. Dakota Lawrence is going to be doing a gallery reading. Myself, I'll be speaking on investigation skills and techniques at a location. That's going to be my topic of discussion. Jeremy Jones will be there discussing advanced tools in the paranormal, talking about his paranology stuff. Kim and Eric Ringzinger will be there from the Paranormal Encounters Network broadcasting live. Several things will be going on at that event. You can kind of pick and choose where you want to go, what do you want to do. I'll be speaking from 1 to 2 on Saturday and 3 to 4. So, and there's several different things going on at the same time. So if you go to something else, you can still catch my speech and the second time that it's going on. And I, myself, Shauna, and my dad will be at Logan Mansion Friday night for a candlelight haunted tour of Logan Mansion Friday night and Saturday night. So, and the place is active, so be interesting what we get. But that's what's going on this month for Unknown Paranormal. Oh, and also I've been asked to speak in November, November 1st. I'll be in San Antonio, Texas at the Black Swan Inn. Resurrection Talent is putting on a conference there at the Black Swan Inn. And I'll be there speaking on behalf of Unknown Paranormal.
Very cool. And I will possibly am going to be a guest on a, I think it's one of those online television shows. And I can't remember. Let me look it up real quick. This just came about this past week. Some of you may or may not know, I dabble in dream interpretation. I've been fascinated about that, you know, with that topic for many, many, many years. And I posted something. Somebody said something about weird dreams or something, and I told them to send me a message because I do that stuff from time to time. Well, this guy named Christopher Johansson contacted me, and he's got a show called Paranormal Activity Investigators, New York Psychic Medium, and it can be found on CasperParanormalResearch.com page. And they do it Monday nights, but I don't know when they're going to have me on yet. So it might be tomorrow, might be next Monday, who knows?
That's pretty awesome.
As long as they don't put you on video. Nobody's going to tune in if they have to see you live on video.
No, if I'm going to be on video, I'm going to make sure it's pay-per-view. Because you have to pay to see this. But now, sometime later this month, I'm actually going to be taking a trip up to Memphis. It's sort of just like a miniature vacation. And I'm going to go to Graceland. And just between you and me, guys, I'm going to try to get into the upstairs bedroom. And if I do, I'm bringing a recorder with me.
I would bring a recorder anyway.
Yeah, you have to.
I would bring a recorder and just turn it on when I go in that place. It don't matter where you're at.
Well, the problem is that Graceland is the second most visited private residence in America. They get over 600,000 different visitors a year, so you know, there's going to be a crap load of people there.
It don't matter.
Lots of contamination.
Oh, well, just for your personal, you know, it's not something you have to post out there. But if you get something, you're like, man, that's cool.
This is true. But I'm also going to try to, I'm going to actually try to see what, I'm going to see what it takes to book time in Sun Studio.
Nice.
Just to see if I can record in the same place where guys like Elvis and Johnny Cash and Buddy Holly and all those guys recorded.
You know, there's going to be like those people coming out of the woodwork to debunk your work. They're like, this is fake because it would never happen in a recording studio.
If it would happen here, we would record it here, put it on the record.
Exactly. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's going to be good. Either 2 weekends or 3 weekends from now. Something like that. I can't wait. I've been through Memphis many times, but I've never been to Graceland.
Well, that'll be cool.
Hell yeah, it'll be cool. Speaking of being cool, I'm going to get me a beer.
Yes.
People out there know, to go ahead and get the plugs out of the way before our guest calls in. June 25th, it's a Tuesday night on Terrify Radio. We will be celebrating 1 year anniversary of Terrify coming on the air and 1 year anniversary of me creating the whole Unknown Radio Network. I did that when I put Terrify on the radio and then decided to try to get every night a show. So we're celebrating 1 year. It'll be myself, Martin, Jeff, along with the host and co-host of all the shows on the network, Terrify, Full Spectrum Radio, Into the Darkness, Ghost Hunt Texas Style, and Paranormal Access Radio. So we'll all be on there, and it's going to be funny, really funny, because when we all get together, it gets really bad, in a good way. But a lot of fun. We'll have some special guests calling in, and it should be interesting.
Awesome. You get a prank call from a guy with a black paranormal team, you know. Oh, man.
Oh, man, I did it again.
What?
I can't find my bottle opener. Oh, this sucks. I'm signing for Gatorade.
It's behind the lotion, Jeff.
What the hell did I do with it? Dog probably ate it. Oh, this sucks. Man, I'm going to go to the store tonight and buy one. And then I'll lose it.
What was it?
My bottle opener.
Oh. Oh, that sucks.
I drink Corona, and you have to have a bottle opener to open a Corona.
Oh, man.
I just drink G2 Gatorade instead.
All right. Well, our guest tonight is Chris Vickers, and I get to talk to him again. He was on Terrify last week.
Yep.
Last Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And here's his bio here. Chris Vickers is co-host of Misguided Souls Radio show on ztalkradio.com. Co-founder
and
lead investigator. Co-founder and lead investigator with Shadows of the Paranormal out of Long Island, New York. Chris has worked alongside many people in the paranormal community, such as Aaron Houdini, Lorraine Warren, John Brightman, Carl Johnson, and the list goes on. Get over here. He was featured on My Ghost Story, episode 23, where he discussed one of his most interesting urban legend investigations. He's been investigating the paranormal for the past 3 years. He uses knowledge of science blended with the spiritual side to investigate all claims given. Within hundreds of investigations under his belt, Chris searches for the answers to which may lie beyond this life. So we have Chris on the line, and let's get him on here.
Hey,
hey
guys,
Chris.
What's going on?
Well, not much.
Hey,
how's
it doing? Pretty good. How's everything? How's everyone tonight?
Great. I'd be doing better if I could find my bottle opener. I know it's gonna be right someplace right in front of me.
Use like the counter of your, you know, like your the corner of your counters or something like that.
Well, the last time I had it was on my coffee table.
Dog ate it.
She probably did. That's the sad thing. Damn dog probably ate it.
Check your underwear drawer.
Check my underwear drawer?
Yeah, because everything that you always lose ends up in there somehow.
Well, this is true. I have lost many things that ended up in my underwear drawer.
Anyway.
Well, Chris, you picked the right show to go on to be on tonight if you host Misguided Souls, because we got three of them right here.
Perfect. So, Chris, for the listeners out there that don't know much about you, talk about how you got into the field and, you know, what got it all started.
My name's Chris Vickers. I grew up on on Long Island, New York, in a town called Central Islip. Central Islip is one of the biggest things it's known for is it used to have Central Islip State Hospital, Central Islip State Psychiatric Center, which was at one time the largest psych center in the United States. And, you know, growing up as a kid in Central Islip, when I was growing up, the psych center was getting shut down, and I used to go check out the buildings a lot and go inside of them, and, you know, a lot of the stuff was just exactly how they left it. Basically, it just seemed like, you know, one day they came in and were like, all right, everyone, we're closing up. Everyone just, you know, grab your coats, let's go. And a lot of the stuff was still there, patient files, everything. And, you know, I used to just go around, and I got into photography, and I wanted to start my own, you know, just going around taking, you know, photos. So I, you know, what fascinated me was the forgotten places, the places that, you know, you may drive by, you know, every day or every week or live near, and you don't even know the significance of that location. So,
right.
You know, I started researching a lot on a computer, and, you know, I started finding a bunch of locations, so I would go to them, and I actually found out there was a paranormal team on Long Island, and, you know, because going to those different places, and, you know, you kind of get a fascination for the paranormal as well, because it kind of ties in with the history, and, you know, a few things happened to me in my life, you know, just strange occurrences and things that I couldn't explain, so, you know, try and, you know, investigate it and see if, you know, throughout data that I can collect, maybe I can come up with an answer or a solution or something to it.
Yeah.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah, Martin, he's into photography as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's awesome.
I started photography back in the film days with the old Pentaxes, and I took some classes. I took some classes for it, learned how to develop, and then I kind of put it down for a while, and I pursued other careers like, you know, tattooing and paranormal and stuff like that. And then just recently, I bought a Canon, and I picked it back up again. So I'm so excited to be back in photography.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean it's something that was just, I always thought was, you know, really cool. And, you know, I never took any classes or anything like that. They had photography classes in my college. And I'm like, you know, it was like, I wanted to do it, but then I was like, I don't know. I don't know if it's right for me. I don't know if it's going to be, you know. So one day I just went out and bought a DSLR camera and just started messing around with it, tinkering. And one of my biggest influences in the paranormal and also in photography is Patrick Burns. He's an amazing photographer, an amazing, amazing investigator, just an all-around great guy. And I started talking to him because I was fascinated with infrared photography.
Mm-hmm.
So the first DSLR camera I got was a Nikon D60. And to me, it was like you go from a little point-and-shoot to this, and it was huge for me. I was like, wow, this thing's so big and bulky. And then I ended up, you know, upgrading from there, and I got a Nikon D7000. And I ended up sending my D60 out to LifePixel and got it converted into an infrared camera.
So, awesome.
But, you know, it's cool because it's these little roadside places, and sometimes if I don't have my camera on me, whenever I travel out of state, I always bring my camera where I'm going. Sometimes I might not use it, but sometimes it's like, yeah, I got to take a photo of this. These little roadside things, these little cemeteries deep in the woods, or, you know, this old historical building or this old historical marker. Since, you know, it's a lot of things that people just drive by every day that they don't realize the historical significance of, you know,
Definitely. Possibly
would have happened there. So.
Oh, yeah. And that's one thing that when I got into photography, and, you know, you go through that period where, you know, the first 2 years, your photos just kind of like crappy, and because you're trying to figure out your style, you know. And when I finally upgraded to my Canon 60D, my eye for photography just blew up. And nowadays, I do the same thing. I go I find locations that, you know, are either abandoned or, you know, or haunted or something like that, and I try to capture with a photo how that place makes me feel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's always a small story that goes with it.
And especially, I mean, one of the biggest things that I love about it is I love hearing photographers, that paranormal investigators and people that do, you know, that investigate that like to do photography because, I mean, you know, we all know as investigators and being in this field, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people who will take photos and they're like, oh, man, it's orbs. And it's like, you know, the dust particles, pollen or moisture or whatnot. And it's you kind of get like a whole, you know, vibe for it. And over the years and over seeing tons and tons of photographs, you can easily pick it out. But one of the awesome things that I love about people who take photography and just – or even whether you're a professional photographer, just an amateur, or just whatever it is, you know, a lot of these locations, me and Kevin had this talk the other day, was we as paranormal investigators get to go into the most amazing locations. You guys were talking about some locations right before I called in. And, you know, some of these places that we get to investigate, you know, there's so many people that will never, ever, ever get to go and walk inside of these buildings.
Right.
So, or these battlefields or these cemeteries or whatnot. So for us, we go in there, and like you just said, it's perfect is, you know, you're trying to capture what you see, that image, that feeling that you have. So now if I go into this location, like I was saying the other day to Kevin, was, you know, I would love to go and investigate. There's so many places that I would love to check out in Texas. Now, for me to get to Texas, that's going to be a great feat. It's kind of hard, but you know what's going to happen. But if you know, if you guys are looking and like, wow, you know, what's around your area? I saw you on, you know, my ghost story. Well, I have photos of those locations. And for you now you kind of get a sense of wow, you really feel like you're at this location. You might never get out to Long Island to go out to this place or to go to some of the locations that I've been, but just to get to see it from a photographer's perspective and a paranormal investigator's perspective as well, to kind of blend those two together, is just incredible because we get to see these locations that many people don't. And unfortunately, some of the locations we get to go to get torn down, you know, shortly afterwards.
Oh, so man, I know.
Trying to preserve that history and that meaning while we're there, to me, it's priceless.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, one of the biggest regrets I have, and it has a little bit to do with photography, but I actually moved to Mohegan Lake in New York for a good bit, and there were lots of places out there that had abandoned houses and just haunted places that I got to go see, but, you know, I wasn't into photography at the time, and I didn't have a camera, so I was not able to document all that. And it was like, you know, now I'm kind of like almost heartbroken about it because I wish I was, you know, had my camera then.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, you know, but that's just some of the things. Like even, you know, a lot of experiences that we have as investigators are sometimes, you know, they're not captured on equipment. So a lot of them are personal experiences. So even though you didn't have that photograph to show people of these locations, you saw that personal experience, you're going to remember it. And the thing is, the best part is talking about it, is if you're like, you know what, I got to go to this one location once, and it was gorgeous. And you kind of like paint that picture for us just by talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, you know, it's still preserving the history, you know.
And then, you know, like, do you go to haunted locations and do the photography as well?
Yes. I mean, you know, I do not so much as to try and capture evidence. If it happens, it happens. For me, it's just basically the same thing, just, you know, to document, you know, everything and just, you know, kind of the same thing as we're, you know, touching upon as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The reason I asked is because, and this started when I went to Old South Paranormal, I mean, Old South Pittsburgh Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, after the night was over and I was just going to go take photos for me, right? I was walking around the hospital, and I wore like a sweatband that you wear on your arm, and I just tucked the recorder in there. And I'm just walking around taking pictures, and would you believe it, man, I got more Class A's during the time that I was just by myself taking photos than when I was actually investigating all night.
It's amazing how stuff happens, you know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Now, what are some of the cool locations there on Long Island that you've been to?
You know, a lot of the places on Long Island, a lot of the historical significances, you know, kind of tie in. I do a lot of urban legends here on Long Island. There's a lot that, like I was saying before, there's a location right next to Kings Park Psych Center. A lot of people have heard about town Kings Park. Right next to it is Fort Salongo. And Long Island was one of the prominent parts of the Revolutionary War. And General George Washington did a tour of Long Island. And what had happened was the British were stationed in Fort Salongo, and there was about 50 military personnel that were at this fort. It was a small fort, and General George Washington had given Sergeant Elijah Churchill some orders to go take over this fort. So they had just taken over another one out east farther. So they had, you know, rode into this town, North Fort, and marched to Fort Salongo. They took over this fort around 2 a.m. in the morning. Sergeant Churchill was injured during the battle. He was the only person. And miraculously, when they got there, instead of just fighting, they snuck up on him, and it was basically just surrender your weapons because we have all these guns on you. Well, Sergeant Elijah Churchill was injured, so he had gone to like a medic tent, and George Washington came to see him and said, I'm going to have a ceremony for you in honor of you. So he had created this little purple medal for him, and he called it the Purple Heart. And he did this whole ceremony. So now the Purple Heart that everybody knows worldwide was started right here on Long Island at this one little battle. So, you know, it was pretty cool when I saw that. I'm like, wow, like the Purple Heart. I'm like, you know, people are given that, you know, for you know, their combat and injuries or things that they've done in wars and overseas a lot. And it was started right in my backyard. So we've investigated that. We've got some stuff, nothing too crazy in that location. One of the best places I love to investigate is Katie's Bar. It was featured on My Ghost Story and season one of Paranormal State. It was an episode called Beer, Wine, Spirits. And I get to go there quite often. The owner, Brian, is really cool with me and the rest of my group, Shadows of the Paranormal. And we kind of have that relationship where I can call him up and like, Brian, listen, I want to investigate. Or he'll call me and be like, listen, dude, some crazy stuff is happening. Come pick up the keys. And we have the keys to the bar overnight. You know, it's really interesting. I got to investigate there in April with Chip Coffee. He's always, you know, in the area. Every few months he comes up and investigates and he checks out the place. And that's one of the best locations. We've got some great evidence there and some really interesting things from Katie's Bar.
Oh, cool.
And that's cool.
Then of course there's Mount Misery, which you know I did an episode from My Ghost Story on it. You know that's another location that is incredible with the amount of evidence we've gotten there, and it's just another urban legend that a lot of people just drive by every day, and a lot of people live on the roads and they know the urban legends of the place, but you know the hard part is just a lot of kids try and go there and. You know, do a lot of things, and it's, you know, it's hard when you're trying to investigate and you got kids flying up and down the road and trying to, you know, have a lady in white jump out of you or, you know, get their car pushed uphill by, you know, kids that apparently a bus fell off of an overpass that never happened, but it's, you know, it's an urban legend, so everyone's got to try it, so.
Now, what was the episode that you were on with this location, what was it about?
Now,
I did an episode for my ghost story. It was episode 23, and it was about the legend of Mount Misery and some of the evidence that we got. And when you go and film for my ghost story, they don't want to know about your team. They say, I don't care if you're in a team. We just want to say me and my friends were out investigating. The group that I was with at the time, I had collected still to this day, and I'm not going to say it just because I used to be part of the team, I would say one of the best EVPs I had ever heard. And it went on for several minutes. The group was walking through the woods, and one of the urban legends was that there was a hospital there, and that the hospital had burned down. And at the time, some of the investigators were trying to dig into it because there was no records of it. But going in the middle of the woods, we were the group is approaching this fire hydrant, older fire hydrant that's in a, you know, like I said, like in the middle of these woods. And we had the group had maybe about 6 or 7 walkies. There's probably 10, 11 people out. But the thing is, in that location, when you split up into teams, even the radio signals that, you know, they're supposed to be good for 15, 17, 20, 30 miles, they get very shaky. So sometimes, you know, only one or two pairs will work out of a dozen that you have out there. So kind of bring a bunch out. Approaching this fire hydrant, one of the walkies, one out of the ones that we had, started getting static on it. And it was basically a voice, and it was like, shh, they're here. And it was kind of like, all right, someone's got to be messing with us. And it's all captured on video as well as audio. And on the video, you hear one of the girls saying, it's got to be some kids messing with us. You know, like that's just weird, you know. And then you hear just like static going through, and then you hear, help me, I'm burning. Help me. Remember the woman.
Wow.
So, and one of the urban legends that people said is that a patient had burned down, and this female patient had tried to escape and burned down the hospital. So this would kind of like correspond with it, correlate with it, that it's, you know, remember the woman, help me, I'm burning, we're burning. And it was just really interesting. And so that was that time. We went back for a follow-up investigation numerous times, and almost every single time we got documented evidence. Sometimes it was through audio or video, and it was crazy because one time that they don't show on our episode is about 15 minutes of on and off communication just through equipment. And this location is one of the only locations that I've ever gone to where I had a TH2A, a thermometer, that's ambient thermometer, and it shows you, you know, the exact temperature of that, you know, 1 foot radius or whatnot. And we would tell, you know, during the EVP session, make it go up 4.4 degrees or 4.7 degrees, or 3.2, and it would gradually go up to that number and then stop until you ask the next question. And this was going on and on. And it was, you know, it's a bunch of horse farms, but it's a few hundred acres of just woods. And there's no one around. There's houses off of the main road. Once you start getting into the woods, you're away from the streets, you're away from the light, and it's complete darkness. And we've all gone into those locations where you kind of feel like someone's watching you. You kind of feel like you're going to turn around, there's going to be someone there. And this is that one location that I could honestly say, every time I go there, I know that something's watching me. And it's like, it's just crazy because now since I did that episode, and we've gone back and done so much research and hit the history books and talked to historians, and there's been no recollection and no documentation of any type of hospital there. But it's like, what happened that night? Now I'm just like, and we've talked to so many people. One of the guys that I've known for years works for AT&T, and there's a radio tower probably like a mile away. And I was like, is there any way we could have gotten some type of interference like that? But he was saying that the way that the audio is, he goes, no, he's like, the signals wouldn't have made it go like that. So, I mean, I've talked to numerous people, and we can't figure it out. So, you know, we kind of classify it as a paranormal experience, but, you know, you never know. And it's just one of those that we've never had a communication like that again, but it's always been something. Every single time we've gone there, we've gotten something. And we're critical. We're very, very hard to be like, all right, that's evidence. And it's every time we try and dismiss it, we try and debunk it somehow. And I have no idea how we've gotten so much to this location.
Wow. What are some of the urban legends that you want to investigate but really haven't been able to check out yet?
There's a few. One of them is, I know that there's scientific explanations for a lot of it, and a lot of things haven't been documented, but just because there's been movies made about it, it's been on tons of other websites. San Antonio Tracks, I would love to check San Antonio Tracks out, and just see if anything's there. Just see for myself, because, I mean, I've watched some movies based on it. I know so many people have gone and investigated and said, well, actually, it's kind of like a gravitational. There's a small dip, and then it goes up, so that's what you're hitting. And, you know, so, but it's just a fascination because so many people know about that location. There's a few more places. One place right out in Ohio, there's some stuff that happened. My friend Devin Nick Lands, we were talking about trying to get up to them and investigate over there. Lorraine Warren and Tony Sparrow were talking about these woods right in Monroe, Connecticut, that there used to be a bunch of apparently Satan worshipping. And in the Warren Occult Museum, they actually have a huge statue of, it looks like a demonic figure, and it's probably 6.5 feet tall, that was actually unearthed, that was buried in that, on that land. As creepy as it sounds, I'm like, you know what, like, someone found this while walking their dog. It was just a little piece of it was sticking up, and they actually unearthed it, and it's like this, looks like some type of demon. Like, it's just like a tall, like, with these spikes, and it's interesting. And there's a lot of urban legends around her area as well. There's a cemetery, Stepney Cemetery in Monroe, actually where Ed Warren is buried. And while we were there with Lorraine and Tony, a few people that I was with had were like, did you just see that? It looked like someone was walking over there. And then one of the people that we were with was, as soon as we walked in, said a name and a date. And she's like, I don't know, I just heard someone say this. Who? And everyone's looking around, and she's like, I don't know, but I heard this name and a date. And walking down one of the aisles, there was someone buried there by that exact name, and that was that they died. So it's a few places. A lot of places I would also like to go. My bucket list, I would say, is back out to L.A. Love to go back out to California, check out the Queen Mary, investigate there. I got to go out there when I was shooting for Bio Channel. The Tate House, the Sharon Tate House. Love to go out to that location as well.
Right.
But, there's just so many places that it's like, you know, as soon as you add one to your list, you got five more that are like, oh, man, I got to go check out. So, but you know, it's eventually we're getting there. I've gotten to travel so much over the past few years, doing events and doing television appearances or whatnot, and just going to meeting friends along the way. It's really cool that I get to go out and investigate so many places and states and that I would never ever travel to without this.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
Kevin keeps telling me this is impossible, but I want to investigate the Titanic. Not the museum.
Yeah.
Just, I want to investigate the real Titanic. get into a little submarine with a recorder and a video camera and go down into the hull of the boat. Kevin,
oh,
can you tell me it's not possible?
Yeah, I'd like to get a lot of money.
If you have a financial record over $40-60 million, I mean, that's definitely possible. And, I mean, I would be right there. Rudy on. I don't even care. Just let me be on a boat up top. I don't care. I'll be in a little raft. I'm fine with that. If you can do that, man, I'd...
that actually, you know, it's actually crazy that you brought up the Titanic because I know, like you said, you wanted to investigate the actual Titanic, but... I go up to Massachusetts a lot, and I have really, really great friends that live up there, and I go to Fall River quite often, at least once a month, and my friend Vinny, who does all of our T-shirts, our sweatshirts, and everything, owns a company called Dark Side Inc., and across from his shop is this like a, it's like a maritime nautical museum. And there's pieces of the Titanic in there. And they got to investigate there 2 weeks ago. And he said he's got crazy audio, crazy photos, video. He's just like, this place is unbelievable. Because a lot of the stuff that's in that location is from all different shipwrecks and ships that have been decommissioned, right, that were in battles or in fires. And it's, you know, stuff like that to me, especially because salt water is a huge conductor.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm,
you know, if you have that, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be any type of intelligent, but even a residual, something, you know, people don't have to die to leave an imprint. So, but just a traumatic event like that can I believe, can capture something, and to be able to investigate that would be perfect. I mean, that would be, I mean, incredible, and nobody ever has.
Kevin,
right,
make it happen for me.
Well, I mean, I've been trying to make it happen on the Titanic Museum in Branson, Missouri, for the last couple of years. I'm still working on that because they have all the very first articles that were brought up from the Titanic, and they've actually, there in Branson, have recreated the first half of the ship, you know, its actual ship, reconstructed it, and they have, like, I don't remember, Jeff, if you remember that when we were getting ready to go to that place, and they sent us that log book that had all the claims in it. But they actually have
that.
A logbook. Yeah, they have a logbook at that place that employees and people that come there write down their paranormal experiences, and they have all kinds of crazy activity. They have a where the replica of the front of the ship where the captain is, where, you know, and the wheel and all of that. They get children's handprints on the outside of the glass all the time, and they have to keep cleaning up footprints that are water, you know, made of water, like somebody got out of the water and walked down the wood floor. There's always footprints with water on them.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. That place, I've heard, is crazy active from when we talked to the people that work there. My dad and mom actually went on a tour there, and, yeah, it's pretty crazy. So I'm trying to get my team into there at some point.
I'm in. I'm going.
That definitely sounds like a great time.
Let's do it. Can we go tomorrow?
No, Jeff, you can't go tomorrow.
I'm on vacation right now, so I can go tomorrow.
Hey, yeah, let's go tonight. Bring by and pick me up, Jeff. I'll go with you.
All right.
Jeff, you know, I figured out the term that I can classify you as now.
Awesome.
You are a urban legend.
An awesome urban legend. And notice the key word in that, the two key words there are awesome and legend. Because, yes, I am a legend.
In your own mind.
Well, in every, well apparently in your mind, too, because you're the one who gave me that title.
No, because it's not proven. Just like you claim to be the paranormal sex symbol, that's an urban legend.
You called me an urban legend. So, therefore, in your mind, I am a legend because the word legend is in that. True?
See what I have to deal with, Chris. I've known this boy since high school.
Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, I would say he's right. Sorry.
Yeah. Now,
I'm so mistreated.
we talked about this the other day, and we'll talk about it again because Martin, he's more into the technical side of the paranormal. He's actually taught me how to build some things from scratch. And do you use pieces of equipment, you know, depending on where you're at and how much you want to carry?
Yeah, we definitely, it definitely varies, you know, for each location and, you know, what we're trying to accomplish, whether it's a home investigation or if it's an urban legend. Depending on the night and the claims at that location depends on how much equipment we bring out. Sometimes if we're, you know, short manned, if there can only be a few individuals on the investigation, we'll bring out a little bit more equipment. And, you know, it all depends. I mean, like we had said the other day, is you kind of go off of your instincts as your number one piece of equipment because you are going to know the best out of everything. But, you know, I use a lot of different pieces of equipment. I would say one of my favorites through home investigations is actually by a gentleman, Bob Christopher. He makes his own equipment. He owns a company called Vortex Ghost Gear. He designed a piece of equipment called the HTO for Haunted Trigger Object. And he's been working on it for the past 3 years. And basically what it does is it lights up and can either have a sound go off as well when it's either touched or a static charge comes near it. So you just connect it with like an alligator clip that he, you know, gives you to anything metal. Like if you put like a tray out, like a metal tray, and you put like toys on it or a glass or something comes near it, this will go off. And the thing that I love about it, it's nice and bright. And before I even got one, me and him were up at Lake George at Fort William Henry, and I was messing around with it for literally about 2 hours. I'm like, come on, this thing has to mess up once. And it's, you know, for the times that it's not hitting when you want it to, it's slim to none. This thing is, you know, has been awesome. It's been on Ghost Hunters, and, you know, he's actually making a model for taps themselves to use. That's one of my favorite pieces of equipment there. But, you know, out in the field, it's, you know, I'm good. I could take anything out. I love using a lot of different meters, or if I just have a camera and an audio recorder, have a flashlight, you know, the basic tools too. Always helps out. So.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, I was just going to ask Martin, has your device gone off any since we've been talking?
Oh, no. So far, just Cancer and Rhonda. Oh, wait. It now said Med.
Ned?
Oh, I made it Med.
Like, yeah, it's Med.
Uh-oh.
That's weird how you had not asked, you know, well, we hadn't talked about it, and then you ask, and that's when the word comes through.
It might be awesome. Mad that Rhonda's got cancer.
I'd be mad if Rhonda has cancer.
I would be, yeah.
Now, I mean, to kind of relate to what Martin's saying, and I highly doubt that this is, you know, whatever that is talking about. I do have a cousin named Rhonda, and my mother just had a surgery to have something precancerous removed. I doubt that that's what that's in reference to, but, you know.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. You know how I am about these devices that have predetermined words in them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. I bought it on a whim the other day, and I got it for such a low price that, you know, when I get tired of it, I just throw it on eBay and make $400 off of it.
Right.
But it's just I don't know. Like I got it because I wanted to see, like, is it any better than, let's say, Ghost Radar? You know, because it's almost what it's like.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it doesn't go off very often, but when it does, it throws out some random words sometimes.
Yeah, now, Chris, have you ever had someone call you with claims of something, and you knew that they were lying?
Unfortunately, yes. there's actually a website that I had signed up. They had sent us an email, and they said, "Hey, listen, if you want to add your group to this page, there's like a links, you know, page. So if people in your area need an investigation, mm-hmm. be my guest, send us your information, and we'll add you on." So they asked me for my contact info to talk to me over the phone. So I gave them my cell phone number. Well, that's what they put on the website. So at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, for weeks, I was getting phone calls stuff was flying around someone's house, and just like a lot. I mean, some of it ended up, we turned it into actual legitimate house investigation. I had a person call me. Well, they had contacted us and said that they have a demon following them, and it's been attacking both, you know, him and his wife, and that something came through and said that they're both going to die, and they need us to come out. So I said, all right, well, I'm going to send you a questionnaire. Just give me your email address, send you the questionnaire, so I can get a little bit better, so me and my team could kind of, like, meet together and go over the information.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked me, they live about 9 hours away. They asked if we can get up there that week. And I'm like, well, for me to just be like, oh, yeah, 9 hours away, like, you know, I need to schedule something, or I can refer you to another team. No, I don't want another team.
Yeah, that's a hell of a haul.
Yeah. So, and especially, it's like, you know, it's not like this is our job. We don't get paid for this. So
right.
It's like it's kind of, you know, for me, I know in my job, I need to, you know, to request off 2 weeks in advance. There's certain things that I, you know, can kind of finagle, but for the most part. So they're telling me that they're going to be dead within the time. So I sent them the questionnaire and never heard back from them. Contacted them like 2 days later. I got a voicemail, and it was just like a cell phone carrier. We get an email saying that we never helped them, and basically that all hell is breaking loose in their house. So I referred them to a group that was close to their area. They never contacted the group, never nothing. I emailed them like about a month later, and I got a reply saying, I don't know what you're talking about. We've never gotten any. Like, basically, they've never contacted us before. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess everything's fine. I've gotten to a house before, and they sent us photos, and they were questionable photos. They said they captured a shadow person in the photo. We get to the location to investigate. We investigate. Kind of feel weird all night. Not because it's something paranormal, but we kind of feel like they're making the things up. And then as we're leaving, they said, well, how long until Jason McGrant contacts us? And I was like, oh. So they were like, well, you guys are going to put us on taps, right? We're going to be on the show GoFundMe. So
wow.
We're like, no.
Oh,
so they're like, well, that's why we had you guys investigate it. If we would have known this up front, we wouldn't have even called you guys. So
wow.
I was like, well, there was nothing. There was nothing on our. I'm like, there's nothing, no affiliation with us. I was like, it's not even like we're from the same area. Our name has nothing to do with that. I'm like, then we get a phone call, like an email a few months later, from a friend of the homeowner saying that the photo was staged and that everything that happened was completely false. We have gotten to the location. It was actually in that location where we found an audio recorder that was on play mode in the house.
Oh God.
So I think that they kind of just like recorded a word or a few words, a sentence, and then just let it play to see if we would pick up on it. But I mean, yeah, we've gone into some places where you kind of know just right off the bat, or a little while into it, it's like total BS. And then there's the people who they need a shrink and not a paranormal investigator.
Yep.
We did a house investigation. I had to leave. It was like a cat sanctuary, and I'm allergic to cats. And the lady was seeing all these things. Well, because the animals went to the bathroom anywhere they wanted, so it was basically like the ammonia in the air.
Oh.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. You could smell it out. So it was kind of one of those, like, you just need to clean up kind of things, and I mean, this is going to take a long time and a lot of money to get that smell out of the wood, but
mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, but it's kind of hard because, like, how do I tell you, you know, hey, I hate to break the news to you, but, you know, but there's a lot of times it happens. I mean, not as often as it used to, because as soon as we get an email or a call, we get contacted about a case, we send over a questionnaire, and it's lengthy. It's 54 questions, and it's a lot. It kind of gets a little bit personal, but we need to know what we're getting into. And then as soon as we get that, we go over it real quick, and then we contact them, you know, through the phone and just kind of like touch base, so we know what we're getting ourselves into before we walk into this location. Because
we have
to worry about our safety as well.
Right. Kevin, do you remember the first time we went to that house in Oklahoma?
Oh, God, yes.
The sad thing is, this was a pretty active place. But the lady was, we were conducting the interview, we're on camera and stuff. This woman apparently had not cleaned anything in her house in probably 6 to 8 months, if I had to guess. I mean, there were dishes stacked on top of dishes in the sink. There was meat that had been left out on the counter for who knows how many days. And just in the kitchen alone, there was about 50 flies. And the lady said that one of her, her claims was feeling nauseous. And I looked at our teammate Will and I went, I think I figured out the nauseous part here. But turned out it really was active. It was not just, a sloppy house. It was a sloppy house and a haunted house.
Well, part of the problem there with that place was because of the dirty home. When you let a house go like that and it's really dirty, the energy level in that house goes down. You know, you got more negative energy, and and it doesn't help when you get drunk and decide to play with a Ouija board with your neighbor, and you open something up, and it was nasty. There was some spirits there, but they were basically trapped. They were being tormented by this demonic force that was there, and I'll never forget. You know, it's so bad when you're a guy and you don't even use the bathroom in the house. You go outside. But the the bad part about it is, you know, it stunk, but it didn't stink as bad as when that demonic force, when we pissed it off, it decided to drop a sulfur fart, because it stunk up that bedroom when we were back there, and one of our dumbass team members, because I can say that because I'm no longer part of that team. That team don't even exist now, but one of my dumbass team members decided that he wanted to provoke to see what kind of evidence he can get. And at that time, I didn't even know anything about the dark side of the paranormal. And, we pissed it off, and it ended up throwing three of us from the bedroom into the hallway. And that's when I knew you don't do that. And you especially don't do that in somebody's home. Because we ended up coming back later. We drove another 6 hours back up there.
Yep. He wasn't there then.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jeff,
I think what happened was that demon there finally got tired of that smell and it was like, get this dog here, so I'm gone.
Oh,
man. If I was a demon, I wouldn't want to haunt a place like that.
That's true. You know, and I've always said this, Chris, and I'm sure you agree, as dealing with residentials, sometimes live people are more scary than the spirit world.
Yeah. And something that I find is crazy is, after we investigate and we go back and we do a reveal, homeowners react better if you tell them that you found something than if you found nothing.
Right?
Because a lot of times people are convinced that their house is haunted, and apparently we're not doing our job correctly, and apparently we don't know what we're talking about.
Well, to go along with that, though, I think there's a psychological thing going on where they, you know, in their, maybe it might just be in their heads, but maybe something really is happening. And then, you know, maybe when you were there, nothing happened, you didn't catch anything. And it, from a psychological perspective, it could be kind of a shot to their own mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, that's one of the biggest things that we let every single one of our clients know as well. Is just because we don't get something on our first time there doesn't mean that we're saying nothing's there. Because
absolutely.
They live in that house, they sleep there, they eat there, they bathe there. We're only there for a short window. So in that time period, you know, it's hard for, I mean, think about it, you know, if you went to somebody's house or a party and, you know, there's random people or if random people just walked in your house, it's going to take you a little bit to start warming up to it and having a conversation with them or saying hello, especially if you can get away with them not seeing you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it's one of those as well. So, you know, a lot of people understand that. We're actually working on a case now where we're going back for our fourth time. Every time we've gotten just a little bit more. And it's happened like that before. And, you know, you just... Sometimes the clients only want you to investigate that one time, and I tell them, like, listen, that's fine. I'm here to do whatever you ask. I'll come back if you want me back 50 times. I'll come back 50 times until you feel comfortable in your own home, because that's the biggest thing is, you know, you have to feel comfortable and safe in your own home.
And there's some people that think that, you know, being a ghost hunter or a paranormal investigator is a lot like just taking a trip to the store to get whatever you want. They think, oh, you get evidence like every single time out. When in reality, it's probably closer to fishing. You may go out to a place where fish are known to bite, but you're not guaranteed to catch anything.
Right. And then there's times like here recently, we sent something in the house, so we called in one of our friends that has abilities to read the home, and he started communicating with a male spirit in the house, and
we were asking him questions to ask the spirit and back and forth kind of thing. And we were getting information. And he finally divulged his name and even gave a date. But because the homeowners could not find anything about the gentleman, I don't know. They've stopped communicating with me. They haven't called. I've repeatedly sent texts to them to check on them to see if they need anything. You know, if they want, we gave them the option if they want us to cleanse the home and push this spirit out, or if they want to, you know, try to live with it, whatever they wanted to do. You know, it's their home, their choice. But ever since we gave them that information, it's kind of like everything just halted, right? You know, so I don't know if they're thinking, well, either that guy doesn't have a gift and they were filling us full of bull, or the spirit didn't divulge the right information, or whatever it might be. I just know ever since we made that visit, I have had no contact with them. They won't respond. So I don't know what the deal is there. You know, and I've had another client that crazy ass claims. You know, when you hear the claims, you're like, oh, there's something bad there, right? So we went and did an investigation, and we didn't catch anything. We absolutely had nothing really happening. And what it is, you know, when especially dealing with having people on our team that are sensitive and can feel spirits, just think about it. And I always tell clients this: if a spirit doesn't want, and they know your intention, they know when you walk in to investigate that you're there to try to prove that spirit is there, right? Well, if you're a spirit that doesn't want the homeowners to know who you are or what your intentions are, and this team comes in, your ass is going to leave for a while. You know, you're going to say, well, hell is this? They ain't going to find out anything about me. Boom, I'm out of here, you know. And then you leave, and then it comes right back in and starts doing the same thing. So that's one thing I try to explain to clients. You know, it's you're dealing a lot of times, you know, if you're not dealing with an inhuman spirit, but if you're dealing with humans that were once on this earth, just like in real life, if a group of people walked up to you and wanted to talk to you and you didn't want to talk to them, you walk off.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same scenario in the spirit world now. These were once human beings. So if you're asking, you know, questions, what's your name, what are you doing here, that kind of thing, they don't have to talk to you. You know, that's their choice.
Yeah, definitely. No, you're 100% right.
Yeah, so you know, it's one of those things. And like you said, all the clients, they want some kind of answer, and I understand that. And I tell them we'll do the best we can, but the spirit world doesn't work on our time. They do what they want. If they want to do things in the morning, they can, whatever it might be. But, you know, they operate when they want to, and that's the thing. And then there's other spirits that are real cooperative because they're there for a reason. They're there to get a message. They're there to let the family know that they're okay if it's somebody that passed in their family, you know. And those spirits, they want to get a message across. That's the whole reason the activity has started in the first place, is for them to actually contact somebody that will be able to communicate with them. So it's like a catch-22 sometimes that when you're dealing with clients, you know, and that's what, you know, Chris and I talked about Tuesday. You know, that's why you can't put a price on it, because it's not guaranteed. You can't charge somebody for something that there's no experts in the field. There's not one. If there's somebody that claims to be an expert in our field, then you need to run the other way, because there's no experts. We're all learning. You can be in this field 20 years and still see something new, you know? I mean, even John Zaffis learns new things, and he's been in the field longer than any of us. And that's one of the things, you know? And so to put a price on it and say, well, I can guarantee that I can get rid of what's in your home, no, that's not going to happen. And I've even seen, I think it was last year, on another radio station, they had a couple individuals that would charge to clear your home, but they would do it by phone. They wouldn't come to your actual house. They would call you, and they would clear your home from wherever they are, and they would charge you hundreds of dollars.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
I actually came up with a foolproof way to cleanse a home. Guaranteed results every time. I actually came up with this. What I do before I go to cleanse a home, and I don't use any of the traditional stuff, about 2 hours before I go into the home, I eat a big bowl of refried beans.
Yeah, I was going to say that because when we were on the road with you, to Old South, you cleaned out that van plenty of times.
I did?
There was some, yeah, oh yeah.
That had to have been Will.
I was like, pull the van over. I can't smell anymore.
That had to have been Will. I did not eat too many gaseous things on that trip.
Oh, man, I ate them all, dude. Every time we stopped at a gas station, I was like, what here? You know what? I'm going to have some pickled hot links. Oh, man. Yeah, that road trip was crazy,
though.
Yeah,
I just make sure that they just have to buy me the beans. A whole lot cheaper.
I was actually kind of blown away by the Team Realtree energy drinks. I was like, wow, these rednecks have gone too far.
right. But, you know, back to what we were saying, there's no guarantee on it, and, you know, there's some times where you try to help a client and you can't help them. You have to call on somebody else to try to help them. And sometimes even I got a current client right now that she's gone through so many people in the paranormal field and still hasn't gotten help. And I'm trying to get her help, and I'm starting to get to a brick wall again getting her help. You know, and I'm going to probably have to call on some other of my friends in the paranormal to help because it's just it's a case that she's haunted. The house is not haunted. The land's not haunted. She is. And she's kind of sensitive, and she's pulling in spirits inside her body, you know, and it's affecting her health. You can actually see her physically change when some of these spirits actually enter her body. And it's not demonic possession or any of that. It's just spirits. And it's a really odd situation, but, I mean, she called me the other day, you know, desperate because her health's getting bad again. And, you know, it's just it's hard sometimes because I'm just sitting here going, what else can I do for it, you know?
Sometimes it kind of gets a little overwhelming. You gotta sit back and just try to, you know, okay, well, we've done this, and just try and narrow it down and, you know, kind of put everything out there. What could it be? Who can help? Who, you know, and just start trying to narrow it down. And it sucks because sometimes you get to that point where you just feel like, what else can I do? Is there anything else I can do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's just one of those things when we're dealing with clients. And that's, you know, it's so, to me, you know, going to a location, right? You know, some locations you have to actually pay to investigate. Others, it's free of charge. But when you go to those places, it's kind of a different atmosphere as far as the team, because you're not actually trying to help somebody client-wise. You're there to explore the building, see what kind of activity is going on, what kind of evidence you get, experiments that you can do, you know. So it's kind of a less type of situation than when you're with a client, because clients, you're having a problem solved, and you have to be on your toes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just, it's one of those things, and when people that have not, and I've gotten this before, and I hate it. If you're starting a team, anybody listening, if you're just now getting into the paranormal, do not take on residentials for a while. Talk to people. Read books. Do some research on the field. Learn from different people that have been in the field. Get some knowledge under your belt. Go to some locations. Do some investigating before you start dealing with clients. Because I get tired of being the cleanup guy that has to go in with my team and clean up another team's mess.
Yeah, I get tired of that too.
Or, you know, had investigated a location. It was a private residence. And it was about 5 or 6 times that we investigated there. And when I had left that group, basically different philosophies, different opinions and views, I always wondered what happened to that case. And you kind of don't want to step on people's toes in the paranormal because the paranormal people kind of get pissy really quick and they're all like, a lot of people are divas, so
just a bit.
You know, but I did contact that homeowner, and I just wanted to make sure that everything was fine. I'm not trying to get in there. She goes, actually, they came to do a house cleansing, and the activity got a lot worse. And we contacted them, and they never contacted us back. So I said, well, if you want, try contacting them again. And I gave her different forms to contact them, you know, different alternatives and different ways to contact them. And she goes, I don't even want them in my house. She goes, but I wish you guys still had a team. And I said, well, we do, but I don't want to be that guy. And she goes, no, she goes, listen, she goes, I will physically, she's like, I'll call her. And it's kind of one of those things. It's hard because a lot of people are ashamed. And that location, they actually went to their church numerous times, and it got to the point where the church kept turning them down, kept turning them away. And they had evidence of stuff there that I captured there. And stuff where, like I said before, I dismiss a lot of things, and I can debunk a lot of things. Some of the stuff that happened in this house, I was just like, I can't explain this, and I'm trying to come up with all these different possibles, and I couldn't. I was at like a dead end, and I'm like, I can't figure this out. This is something. This is a paranormal phenomena. This is something that I cannot recreate. And they brought that to the church and transferred it back on them. So it's kind of hard when someone screws up, makes the situation worse. The church won't help, and then you got to go back and kind of clean up the mess in a nice way, because it's like, you know, they have nowhere else to turn.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
Oh, exactly, and I totally agree, and that's why I always try to, you know, reach out and tell people, you know, if you're getting in a group, starting a team, a new team, you know, reach out to me or anybody in my team, and we'll be happy to help you in any way. We're not experts, but we can share what knowledge we have of the field. And, you know, that's one reason Martin, myself, and Jeff do the radio, because we get to talk to a lot of people, you know, without having to travel all over the countryside and learn all kinds of things from different people in the field, and it just broadens our knowledge as well.
Oh, of course, and like you guys said before, is, you know, there is no one in the field that's an expert, because we are all involved in a field that is not scientifically proven. And, you know, John Zappas has brought up, I've known John for a while. We've talked about cases, and actually he was one of my assistants on that case. You know, for someone who's been in the field for 30 years, 30 plus years, I should say, you know, whenever you go to talk to these people or you go for advice, they're not saying, well, I'm an expert, blah, blah, blah. It's their theories of it, because you may be right, I may be right. We could both be right, we could both be wrong. We can all be investigating the paranormal completely wrong. Some of the equipment that we use may never, ever be able to detect the paranormal, but we don't know, so that's why we keep trying and keep going back and trying to collect data and just try different things, broaden our horizons, open our minds up, and kind of just take what other people say. And, you know, along the way, you get to meet people, and I host a show, too. I talk to a lot of people. I go to a lot of conventions and try and do a lot of research. And there's a lot of people in the field that you take with a grain of salt. But there's a handful that you can kind of, okay, I can understand where they're coming from. And I like that theory. I like their approach on that. And it all makes us and helps us to become a better investigator. Because nobody's perfect. Nobody's doing it 100% right. Because otherwise, this field would be scientifically proven, and we'd be able to contact with whoever we want, whenever we want. So.
Exactly. And you've met Lorraine Warren and worked with her before?
Yes, I have. Awesome.
What's she like?
Huh?
What's she like?
Pardon
me.
She... Everyone that I kind of talk to her about is she's definitely that grandmother figure. Very warming, very open. You feel comfortable around her. And she could pick up on a lot of things. And the first time I actually met her, we were at Mark Twain's house. And there was probably maybe 200 people in the room, and I was behind her table. She was selling one of her books. She was autographing, and we were just having a conversation. And a gentleman that worked at the location says, can you tell me stuff about me? Can you, like, pick up on me? And, like, he was trying to get a reading from her. And at that moment, and, like, I knew about her and this and that, but it was the first time that I was meeting her face-to-face. This was the time that I realized that, you know, I believed her, because she said, it doesn't work like that. She goes, you have a stadium full of people yelling at you and trying to talk to you. I can't pick out one's message and say it's yours. She goes, I can't read somebody. I can't, you know, connect with so many people. And she goes, we would need, and she's like, just kind of describing things. And I was like, all right, I understand it. And then, you know, sitting down with Chip Coffee as well, he's saying, I like doing gallery readings. He does. It drains him, but he doesn't like to have over 50 or 60 people, because he goes, there's so much going on that you might get mixed signals or things that cross. And he goes, spirits always aren't 100%, you know, they're putting it their way, station of it. But then from what he was saying, I kind of, it made me believe more of Lorraine. And she, I've gone to her house a few times, and we've gone and we've talked about a bunch of different things, and she's very genuine.
Yeah.
I was at her house, and I actually watched a video of an exorcism that was performed, and I believe it was the mid to late 70s, and it was a case that her and Ed had worked on. And she said, she goes, you know, she goes, I'm going to be honest. She goes, on all the exorcisms that I've assisted on, she goes, I'm not a demonologist. She goes, I know the demonology field, but I don't perform these exorcisms. I've been a part of them, and I've been accompanying. And it's interesting, because until that point, I kind of knew when I first started, you know, media, but I figured something. And she goes, no, some people need 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 30 times. And sometimes it will get, but it was interesting. And getting to sit and talk to her and hear about her life, hear about
true paranormal investigating, because we're the first paranormal investigators that went and actually investigated thousands. Because before them, who else was there? And she was telling me that her and Ed never charged for house investigations, and they both learned painting. So they would paint pictures on wood and do a bunch of craft fairs and sell stuff to different little shops and people, and that's how they would raise money to go on cases. That would be their gas money, their travel expense, their airfare. Paintings that they would paint. And I was like, that's really, you know, that's interesting. She's like, yeah. She's like, it was part of our job, and we would set money aside to travel and help people out. And I found that fascinating, because it's like, you know, we all put money aside. It is hard. And, you know, when there was nobody else, and it's interesting hearing her saying, well, when her and Ed were investigating, and they were, if they needed someone to perform an exorcism, well, there was only maybe one person that was qualified within 12 or 15 states. And she goes, nowadays, how many people, you know, can do an exorcism, and how many people claim that they can do an exorcism? She goes, the people that claim, there are a dime a dozen. There's 1,000 in, you know, in one state. And it's just really crazy, you know, how, you know, and I would always say, if you guys ever get a chance to sit down and talk to her and have a conversation, the amount of stuff that you get to learn is unbelievable. And I mean, it's just how the times have changed, because she's been in the field for 60 years. So from what she's seen it, you know, in its original state or its early stages, to the rise of everything from the television shows and radio shows, there was none of that when they started. So it's really interesting to get to hang out and to talk to her about that, because it's just stuff that you're really not going to find anywhere else.
Oh, yeah. And you've been able to sit down and talk to her. You're one of the fortunate ones, you know, because of the knowledge that she has, you know. And I'm real curious when the movie Conjure comes out, because that is a story based on Ed and Lorraine. They're actually characters in the movie on a case.
Yep.
And
I watched the preview for that. Oh, dude, that's so creepy looking. Those little hands that come out of nowhere to clap.
Yeah, there's so many things, and it's incredible. Yeah, it really is. So, I mean, it was definitely a blast, and, you know, going to our house and checking out the occult museum and sitting down and being able to talk about, you know, certain items and certain things that, you know, she's seen, and that it's crazy. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. that's why when I had Brian Kano on the show about a month ago, I talked to him, you know, about John and, you know, his experiences with John. And it's cool to hear those kind of, you know, stories from these people that have been in the field, well, you know, way before we even were a sparkle in our parents' eyes, you know.
Yep. Brian is an awesome guy, very knowledgeable, and I've known him for a few years. Him and Chris Mancuso, they run a team called Scared. They're out of Staten Island, which is literally, it's about 45 minutes an hour from my house. And it's cool because I got to investigate with them a few years ago at the Victorian Mansion in Gardner, Massachusetts, and it was cool because I had never met them before, and it was my first time going to that location, first time meeting them. They came up to me and were like, oh, my God, I saw you on the news. You guys were investigating a psych center. Tell me what happened. What happened with the cameras? And they were just like total, like little kids, like, oh, my God. Like, because these are the places that they investigated, too, because we live so close to each other. And, you know, we stay in contact, and I was up with Brian at Fort William Henry a few weeks ago as well, Lake George. And he is just a wealth of information, and the stuff that he gets to see and, you know, and experience, and his theories, and, I mean, the parapsychology, and he's a huge, you know, he does
John's tech, and you know, that's what I did. I ran tech in my last group, and that's my main focus. I'm the one who's coming up with these solutions and these, you know, these things, and just kind of like trying to figure them out. I love to try new things. So I'll like ask my dude, I saw this on Hanukkah, how did it work? Or, you know, he would say, listen, I want to try this. What do you think about it before we put her on the show? And it's pretty cool because, you know, the stuff that they get to see, especially being on the road and getting to travel with John, who John learned from his aunt, Lorraine Warren, you know, so it's got to be an incredible experience too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Brian's a good guy. He's a guy that basically, you know, he's on television, got a current show, and he hasn't let that go to his head. You know, he's a very down to earth guy. I've talked to him numerous times, and he's actually going to be headlining our conference down here in Texas. He's never been to Texas. Always wanted to come down here, and I'm flying him down for my paranormal conference down here. So it's going to be cool to actually sit and talk with him and actually investigate with him. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah. When he was in Gettysburg. They were doing a location, a historic location in Gettysburg. And obviously the building was from the 1800s. And right before they left, Brian went through the floorboards. So,
nice.
Yeah, they had to get some work done in the house, and he felt horrible. The next morning, I saw him and Chris, and I was like, oh, how'd the investigation go last night? He's like, oh, man. It was like General Lee's headquarters or one of those locations he was doing. And I don't remember what it was. And he's like, dude, he's like, my foot went through the floor. He's like, how did they fix that? And I'm like, uh-oh. So, but nah, he's an awesome person. And getting to sit down and talk to him, you learn a lot. And the good thing is he's one of those, you feed off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So he's always learning, too. It's not, you know, like we said before, there's no experts in this field. But it's great when you finally get to meet a person who kind of has the same type of philosophy that you do and who's gone to so many different places and seen so many things and investigated with a huge amount of people. You know, get to sit down and talk to them as you learn so much. And that's what it's about. We're all learning. Every single place we go, every single thing we do, every time we pick up that piece of equipment, we're finding something new. We're documenting stuff. We're trying to collect that data. And I mean, it's incredible. I love every minute of it.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. It's just really cool to meet, you know, new people in the field, and that's another thing. You know, not only do we find out new locations throughout the United States and in the world that we want to investigate all the time. You know, you get your bucket list. And then you have to add more because people are like, hey, have you ever heard of this place? Check this place out. And it's the same with the people in the field, you know, constantly meeting new people in the field and finding out their theories and thoughts on what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Now, I know you said on Terrified when we were talking about locations that you would love to go to, and you had mentioned Linda Vista. What do you think about what they're going to do over there and turn part of that location into a retirement home?
It's a hard one. recently, I'd say a little over a month and a half ago, I went up to Massachusetts. That's where my girlfriend Taylor lives. And me and her, I said, listen, going to see Danvers Psych Center is huge for me. I want to just go there. And they turned Danvers Psych Center, which was a Kirkbride building set up, same thing. They set that up into apartments. And it's gorgeous. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's stunning. But the thing is, they also didn't tell a lot of these people, hey, this used to be a psychiatric center. It was a state hospital, which was interesting. And I heard that a lot of people, once they moved in, had some claims. Linda Vista kind of has a bad history because they had an unbelievable amount of deaths when that hospital was opened. And a lot of people said it was cursed. Now, whether it was or not, who knows, whether it was poor medicine, whether it was the location, whether it was coincidence, we're never going to know. But I did get a chance to sit down and talk to two of the security guards that worked there. They say that they film a lot of movies, a lot of television shows there, and they say that there are a lot of experiences that happen. I would love to get in there and check it out and get to investigate it for myself. Unfortunately, it's on the other side of the country. It's kind of hard. But it always sucks when – I mean, I understand you can't – not everything historical can be preserved. Not everything paranormal can be preserved. So they're going to go in and they want to do some work and do some demolition and some reconstructing and make housing. And you know what I mean? I guess, you know, that's what needs to be done because they're not making much money. You know what I mean? It's privately owned, but that guy needs to start making more money. So I understand it from a business perspective. But as a paranormal investigator, you never want to see that stuff happen. You always want to see everything stay and, you know, these places that are going to be demolished. You want to see someone just, you know, pay for work to get done and it's still slowly. I do feel that there's a possibility that once they start a construction or if people do move in there, that they will start having activity. Highly probable. I mean, you just never know, but I mean, it's always a shame when you see a location start, you know, changing a form from what you know it to be. Because you just know that it's only a matter of time before it's all gone. And you kind of can't preserve that full history anymore.
Right. You know, and we had Chris Dedman on a week or two ago. And or it was last week. I can't remember. But anyway, he was talking about Waverly. And, you know, they're still planning on turning part of Waverly into a hotel and actually keeping the third and fourth floor, actually, you know, remodeling it or whatever, putting it back to the way it looked when it was a tuberculosis hospital. Yeah. Yep. And so that should be interesting because, you know, they're not really fully revamping and turning the whole thing into something completely different. You know, they're going to preserve and turn the third and fourth floor back in the way it looked when it was open. So that should be kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, definitely, you know, something like that, it's hard to, because in theory it always sounds great. Is it going to stay like that? You don't know. But it could be good and it could be bad. It could be great because they may say, well, Waverly is $1,500 to investigate for the night. But we'll do it now with hotel rooms, and then you can stay in the hotel or something like that, or we'll give you a deal or something to that effect. And the money that the hotel generates will be going back into the reconstruction and the rebuilding and revamping of those other floors that are going to be investigated. So there is a positive effect to that, as long as what they say now stays true. You know, Waverly Hills in October, end of September, October, beginning of November, they make it into a haunted house. They make tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of money. For the most part, a lot of it comes right back into it. So, I mean, they have to pay a lot of people, but a lot of people also work, you know, free to help out. But, you know, that's a location that is huge in the paranormal community. And I know people have gone there and investigated and says, wow, it's one of the most incredible places. And then I know people that says, it's a bunch of hype. Nothing, you know, I never got anything there, and I've gone there five times. But that's another thing where because of its historical significance and the impact that it's made and it's known for in the paranormal field, if they can make it a hotel and still let people investigate certain floors, I'm all for that. Understand the business aspect. And I understand the paranormal aspects, and you know, if you can manipulate, have it where you can have both of them, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Exactly. We'll see if those people staying overnight have anything going on.
Right. What kind of what do you got coming up for this year with your team, or you going to any conferences, or what's coming on? What do you got going on? I should say. There
we go. We have a few private residence investigations that we're still in the works doing. We're going to be doing an event hopefully next month. Chip Coffey had asked us to help him with an event he wants to offer at Katie's Bar, try and raise some money for the bar. So it's basically one of those things. Chip Coffey calls you and tells you, or we're actually face-to-face. He says, hey, listen, I want SOP to be my team to investigate. We are that team. You don't say no to that, especially to help out, you know, one of your good friends. So we got that coming up. September, we're going to try and hit up ParaFest in Pennsylvania. And then, let's see, 4th of July weekend. It's actually July 6th. I'm going to be out in Massachusetts at John Brightman from NEPR. He every year has a 4th of July barbecue. And, you know, it's pretty cool because we went last year. There was a lot of people there. And this year, I know Ken DaCosta from Rise Up, a bunch of the guys from TAP's home team are going to be there, Riley and Steven Black. There's going to be a ton of people. Vinny from Dark Side Inc., Dark Side Paranormal. SOP is going to be there. PXP, they're going to be there. So there's going to be a whole bunch of people. So that's going to be cool, too. And that's kind of like, I like doing those things, too, because it's kind of like a break. It's kind of like a nice little getaway. You're still with your paranormal peeps, but you're not, you know, you don't have to worry about sitting up at the table or, you know, worrying about anything. For the most part, for the rest of the year, we're kind of laying low a little bit. We'll probably go out of state 2 or 3 more times, but we did a bunch of events so far, the end of last year and the beginning of this year. Within the past 9 months or so, we probably went out of the state like 10 times and did a whole bunch of different events. I'll probably pop in a few here and there. They always come up, but so far it's pretty open on my calendar. So, which is nice, too. It's nice having a little bit of a break. We're always going to be investigating. We're always going to be doing the radio show and researching, updating stuff. So, but, you know, like I said, I travel out to Massachusetts. My girlfriend lives in Massachusetts, so I'm there at least once a month. So I'm always going to be doing stuff there. So,
you have a website for your team, or where can folks come and check out your radio show as well?
Well, our radio show is on ztalkradio.com every Monday night from 7 to 8, which would be 8 to 9 your time, right? We have our website, shadowsoftheparanormal.com, which you can go and check out history of a lot of locations. If you guys go on the site, 99% of the photos that are on that site are my photography. The other 1% is different team members. But everything that's on our site were our pictures. We didn't take anybody else's, which I love. There's so many locations I want to put up there, but I wait till we go there kind of thing. And it's something because, to me, that's creating. I'm like kind of like knocking off from my bucket list, and it's kind of like these are the places that I've gone, and I love seeing it grow. And you can also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/shadowsoftheparanormal. And we're always updating stuff and, you know, have a bunch of information on there. And you can get a hold of us through our Facebook, through our website. I'm on Facebook as well, facebook.com/ChrisVickersSOP.
Sweet. Well, I appreciate you coming on again, Chris. It's been a pleasure to interview you a second time. It's always I learned stuff from you the second time that I didn't the first time.
Well, that's why I like to change it up a little bit, right? So,
right.
I mean, it was a blast. I really enjoyed it, and I would love to hopefully sooner rather than later, get to meet up with you guys, get, you know, some investigating together and just hanging out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we share a lot of common interests and philosophies, it seems, in the paranormal.
Yeah.
And definitely, we would definitely kick off well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Definitely, man. And sounds good to me. And maybe later on in the year, we'll get you back on and see how things have been going, you know, what kind of cases. Because like you said, you're in a lull right now, but you never know when that phone's going to go off and another client's calling you.
Oh, man. Right now, we're in the mix of, like, three house investigations. But the thing is, what a lot of people don't realize, too, is us as paranormal investigators, it gets busier in the winter months for us because people are home a lot more. People now, it's the summertime. People are out, they're going on vacation, they're going out to the beach, they got their windows open, they're associating some of the littler stuff, oh, maybe with something outside. Once they get the, you know, the house closed up and they're back to, you know, spending the time inside because it's colder outside, they're not on vacation. A lot of times they'll notice a few more things, so that's when it seems like we're doing, like, back-to-back investigations.
Mhm. Yeah, I know the feeling. I got three going on right now, so I definitely know you. thanks for coming on again, and we'll definitely have to investigate sometime and hang out. So.
Oh, of course. Thank you guys so much, and it was truly an honor to be asked to be on the show tonight. So thank you guys again, and keep in touch.
Sure.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely will. Well, you have a good night. I said definitely we will.
Awesome. All right, guys. Have a good night.
All right.
Have a good night.
All right. Bye.
All right. Cool. That was Chris Vickers, everyone.
I always like having people from New York on the show.
I forgot. See, I could have gone in and gone that way with the show, but I kept my question. I was going to ask him if he was a Yankees fan or a Mets fan.
Yes, you knew the answer to that, and you knew I'd have some backup.
No. What would you have done if he was a Mets fan and not a Yankees fan?
I'd ask him why he watches so much minor league baseball. I mean, because seriously, that's how they are up there about the Mets. It's like the Yankees are the guys, and the Mets are, you know, they're like they're the generals that are trying to play the Globetrotters, just a bunch of guys that couldn't make it in the Italian League, you know?
Golly.
Seriously, that's the way that the Yankee fans view the Mets.
Yeah, I know. I know it, but, yeah, any listeners out there, if you want to ruffle some feathers, get in a discussion about baseball, Yankees, with Jeff, or get in a conversation with him about the Houston Texans and the Dallas Cowboys, and you mentioned Jerry Jones. If you go to those two topics in sports, you're definitely in for a heated debate.
Well, see, okay. I actually got into a discussion with an ignorant Ranger fan here recently, and I stressed, and I use the word ignorant because what this person really is, I don't really think you want me to say on live on the air. So I asked him, I said, well, how many World Series does the Rangers have? And this dumbass's response was, more than the Yankees. Like, are you serious? So please tell me you're joking. No, I don't know how many we got, but it's more than the Yankees, I'll guarantee it. Okay, you're just an idiot, and you don't need to be procreating, ever. I mean, Cowboy fans can say all they want. I mean, they got five Super Bowl rings. I can't argue with that. My team has none. You know, there's no point in me trying to argue that. But the Texans have more recent success.
Yeah.
They've got two playoff wins in the last 10 years.
I'm not going to get into the discussion. I was just making observation.
Who's
for
right?
Anybody
who's
out there that would like to ruffle his feathers, because I just don't have the energy to do it this time of night.
Who's right?
Some of us have to go to work. Some of us have to go to work tomorrow.
Oh, that's right, because y'all aren't on vacation like me.
Oh, actually, man.
I probably will be going up to my school tomorrow to take care of some cleanup stuff. Plus, I got to submit a work order. Teacher's
cool.
Job never ends.
All right. Well, let's see. Tomorrow, I don't know if Matt's going to be doing Into the Darkness or not. Hopefully so. But on Tuesday, we have the lovely Megan Campbell, who is one of Jody's teammates on
nice.
Her team, her normal team. And have to admit, very good-looking gal. And she lives in Iowa. And
can she
broadcast
via video? Can we hook her up with video? Can we hook her up with video?
No.
Well, damn it, we need to work on that.
But anyway, Megan, she's going to be on this show too, guys. She's going to be our guest next Sunday on this show. Megan will be on the show with us, but she's also going to be on the show Tuesday on Terrify Radio, which should be kind of crazy because when you pair her up with Jody, it gets pretty nasty talk. And not a between them, but, you know, they like to have fun is what I should say. So that should be interesting. And I'm really looking forward to the 18th of June, we're going to have on Terrify Radio, we're going to have Scott Grinwald on the show. And if you've never heard his radio interviews, I'm going to have to try to get him on this show, Jeff, so that you and him can be perverted. Because
I have never perverted. I don't know what you're talking about.
He's made his rounds around our network. He's been on Into the Darkness. He has been on Full Spectrum twice. He's been on Ghost Hunt Texas Style once. And now he's going to be on Terrify. But Scott is a very funny individual. If you want to go back and listen to something really funny, go back and listen to when he was on Full Spectrum the second time when he was talking about the full scrotum camera that he's going to invent.
Now, where did you get the idea that I was perverted?
I can actually read.
Oh, God.
I can actually read off air.
Yeah,
I can read, but on air are some text messages that I received tonight. Oh, man.
I sent you one text message tonight.
Wait a minute. Okay, I'm going to put Jeff on blast here for a second, everyone. He says he's not perverted. Here's the text he sent me. Licking gravy with my tongue is awesome. And if you want to know what he said last Sunday was, can I wipe my ass with your ass?
Yeah.
Jeff sends Martin and I these weird, nasty-ass texts throughout the show. And sometimes it kind of throws me off when I'm about to ask a question and I look down and see these texts.
Yes.
You want to know why I was so quiet tonight, Kevin? You should read my most recent post.
No.
I'll try and
actually do that, and I want to hear your reaction live, like right now.
I was like trying so hard not to laugh on air.
Let's see.
Go to Martin's Facebook.
I'm going right now, boy. Is it going to open up here? Let's see. It's loading. I don't want Facebook's
Kevin still has
dial-up. Okay, here we go. The face you will make. The face you will make when you.
That's not it. Oh wait, yes it is. Never mind. Read the picture.
The face. I'll just hang on. The face you will make when you get it will be priceless.
Yep.
I don't see a picture there.
You don't see the picture?
No, it's still loading. Hang on a second. It's being slow.
Your dial-up's being slow tonight?
They said I could be anything, so I became shark bait. Oh, damn!
Yeah, he saw it.
Martin, if I was there with you, I'd totally high-five you right now.
Oh, my God, Martin. Damn.
Oh, man.
That's funny. Yeah, and I have to see why you were trying not to laugh. Wow.
Oh,
all right, well, we're gonna end the show for tonight. Jeff, what do you have for us tonight?
Okay, since I'm still fielding emails about Kevin's Bruno Mars, and I'm still in apology mode for that, I decided that tonight is going to make up for all of that. This is Volbeat, Warrior Call.